More than 450 miles due north of where Reacher was sitting, the United States finished and Canada began. The world's longest land border followed the 49th parallel, over mountains and roads and rivers and streams, and through towns and fields and woods, its western portion running perfectly straight for nearly 1,900 miles, all the way from Washington State to Minnesota, every inch of it undefended in the military sense, most of it unfenced and unmarked, but much of it surveilled more closely than people knew. Between Washington State and Minnesota, there were 54 official crossings, 17 manned around the clock, 36 manned through daylight hours only, and one entirely unstaffed but equipped with telephones connected to remote customs offices. Elsewhere, the line was randomly patrolled by a classified number of agents, and more isolated spots had cameras, and great lengths of it had motion sensors buried in the earth. The governments on both sides of the line had a pretty good idea of what was happening along its length. A pretty good idea, but not perfect knowledge. In the state of Montana, east of the Rockies, below the tree line, the land spent 100 miles flattening from jagged peaks to gentle plains, most of it thickly forested with conifers, the woods interrupted only by sparkling streams and freshwater lakes and occasional sandy, needle-strewn paths. One of those paths connected through labyrinthine miles of twists and turns to a dirt fire road, which ran south, and in turn connected to a wandering gravel road, which many miles later ended as an inconspicuous left-hand turn off a minor county two-lane far to the north of a small, no-account town called Hog Parish. A gray panel truck made that left-hand turn. It rolled slowly along the gravel, crunching quietly, getting bounced left and right by the ruts and the bad camber, its springs creaking, its headlights off, and its parking lights on. It burrowed ever deeper into the bitter cold and the darkness, endlessly. Then eventually it turned onto the fire road, beaten dirt now under its wheels, bare, frozen trunks to the left and right, a narrow slice of night sky visible overhead. Plenty of stars, no moon. The GPS satellites thousands of miles up connecting perfectly, guiding it, showing it the limits of safety. It crawled onward many miles, and then the fire road petered out and the sandy track began. The truck slowed to a walk and locked into the ruts it had made on its many previous trips. It followed them, left and right, through arbitrary turns and curves, between scarred trees where the clearance was tight, with stubs of low branches scraping the sides. It drove for more than an hour, and then came to a stop in a location chosen long before, exactly 2 miles south of the border. No one was certain where the motion sensors had been buried, but most assumed that a belt a mile either side of the line was the practical limit. Like a minefield, another mile had been added as a safety margin, and a small area of underbrush had been hacked out to allow the truck to turn. The truck backed up and turned, and stopped astride the sandy track facing south, in position, ready. It shut down and settled, and its lights went off. It waited. Reacher waited in the dark in his tub armchair, 40 minutes, an hour, tracing the next day's intended route in his head, south to the interstate and then east. The interstate would be easy. He had hitchhiked most of the network before. There were on-ramps and rest areas and a vast traveling population, some of it commercial, some of it private, a fair proportion of it lonely and ready for company. The problem would come before the interstate, on the middle-of-nowhere trek down to it. Since climbing out of the car that had dumped him at the crossroads, he had heard no traffic at all. Nighttime was always worse than daytime, but even so, it was rare in America to be close to a road and hear nothing go by. In fact, he had heard nothing at all. No wind, no night sounds, and he had been listening hard for tires on gravel. It was like he had gone deaf. He raised his hand awkwardly and clicked his fingers near his ear just to be sure. He wasn't deaf. It was just the middle of the night in the countryside, that was all. He got up and used the bathroom and sat back down. Then he heard something. Not a passing vehicle, not wind, not night sounds, not tires on gravel. Footsteps on gravel. Chapter 8. Footsteps on gravel. One pair. A light, hesitant tread. Approaching. Reacher watched the window and saw a shape flit across it. Small. Slight. Head ducked down into the collar of a coat. A woman. There was a knock at the door, soft and tentative and padded. A small, nervous hand wearing a glove. A decoy, possibly. Not beyond the wit of man to send someone on ahead, all innocent and unthreatening, to get the door open and lull the target into a sense of false security. Not unlikely that such a person would be nervous and hesitant about her role. Reacher crossed the floor silently and headed back to the bathroom. He eased the window up and clipped out the screen and rested it in the bathtub. Then he ducked his head and climbed out, scissoring his legs over the sill, stepping down to the gravel. He walked one of the silver timbers that boxed the path, like a tightrope, silently. He went counterclockwise around the circular cabin and came up on the woman from behind. She was alone. No cars on the road, nobody in the lot, nobody flattened on either side of his door, nobody crouched under his window, just the woman, standing there on her own. She looked cold. She was wearing a wool coat and a scarf. No hat. She was maybe 40. Small, dark, and worried. She raised her hand and knocked again. Reacher said, "I'm here." She gasped and spun around and put her hand on her chest. Her mouth stayed open and made a tiny O. He said, "I'm sorry if I startled you, but I wasn't expecting visitors." She said,
"Perhaps you should have been."
"Well, in fact, perhaps I was, but not you."